The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to America's Web Radio. This is Ron Bachman, and you're listening to Healthcare Insight. For those who have been long listeners of this particular segment on America's Web Radio, you know that we've really been talking more about politics in general than healthcare issues. And today, what I want to do is introduce our audience to Mike Johnson, the new Speaker of the House of Representatives, after many weeks of not having a leader of the House and the House not being able to conduct any formal business until a speaker is elected. Finally, the Republicans got their act together and elected a representative that many of you may never have heard of. I've known of Mike Johnson. I've followed him a little bit. He is a very bright representative, now Speaker of the House from Louisiana. And I want you to hear firsthand some of his thoughts, some of his goals, some of his direction, basic principles of governance. That's going to be important as we move forward with the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. They have a very slim majority. They can only lose four seats, basically, to get anything passed by Republicans. And as you all know, listeners of this program and the political junkies that are out there, that it's very difficult to get any kind of a bipartisan bill or proposal passed by the House when it is such a narrow margin. Everybody sort of gets in their own corner, and they don't vote for the other party's proposals on any kind of major issues, maybe naming of a post office or something incidental or insignificant. But getting the Republicans together to actually pass something, and then actually passing something that could pass a Democrat-controlled Senate is even harder. So we do have an awful lot of gridlock going on in Washington. But the voice and the face of the Republican Party leadership on the House of Representatives side, I think, is going to be very ably carried forward with Mike Johnson. He's a very reasonable, sensible person. He's a very strong conservative, very strong faith. He wears his faith on his sleeve, recognizes that in areas of potential conflict with his Christian beliefs, that he also is a constitutionalist, that if something is passed like gay marriage at the Supreme Court, he follows that, even though he personally might not believe that. And there are other issues that will come up that might challenge his personal beliefs, but he makes it clearly known that he will follow the Constitution, he will follow judicial principles and rulings on cases. So I want you to hear from this new voice of the Republican Party, a new conservative voice, and maybe even a voice of the future leadership of the entire Republican Party as we move forward. He's a young man who's got many years in front of him, and I think is ideally situated to present conservative principles as Speaker and ultimately as a spokesman for the entire Republican Party, and who knows, maybe even higher offices at some point in the future. But I want you to hear from him as he makes his acceptance speech to be Speaker of the House. There may be some clapping in the background, but I do want to cut off and not just show his whole speech, which you can see on YouTube, but I want to break it up into pieces and sort of present some of his ideas and be able to comment on them and emphasize some of the things that he says along the way. And then I want to do some question and answers for him around his governing philosophy, his governing theories, and we'll sort of see where this goes. But this is a very important voice that I want our audience to listen carefully to. And if you don't know Representative Mike Johnson from Louisiana, I want you to get to know him now as Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. So let's listen to some of his first comments from his acceptance speech.
I want to say to the American people, on behalf of all of us here, we hear you. We know the challenges you're facing. We know that that there's a lot going on in our country, domestically and abroad, and we are ready to get to work again to solve those problems, and we will. Our mission here is to serve you well, to restore the people's faith in this house, in this great and essential institution.
So you can hear from his voice that Speaker Johnson is a very serious man. He understands the gravity of the job, and the gravity of the situation that we find ourselves in historically, and his role in helping to guide and direct the principles of conservative governance, of trying to be a serious partner with representation and compromise on all sides, working with Republicans and Democrats together. But let's hear a little bit about his background. Speaker Johnson, tell us a little bit about who you are, where you came from, and about your upbringing and your life, so that people can understand the person of Mike Johnson, not just Speaker Mike Johnson.
My dad, it was mentioned, my dad was a firefighter. He was an assistant chief in the fire department in my hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana, a little town in northwest Louisiana. On September 17, 1984, when I was 12 years old, he was critically burned and permanently disabled in the line of duty. All I ever wanted to be when I grew up was the chief of the fire department in Shreveport. But after the explosion on that fateful day, he nearly died, and it was a long road back, and it changed all of our life trajectories. I'm the oldest of four kids, and my dad, he lived with pain all the rest of his life, for decades more, and I lost my dad to cancer 3 days before I got elected to Congress, 3 days. And he wanted to be there at my election night so badly. I'm the first college graduate in my family. This was a big deal to him.
So you can see the new speaker comes from very humble backgrounds. He has a very humble personality, a very humble set of basic principles. It comes from his Louisiana roots. What I want you to listen to next is how he took that down-home feeling, that family feeling about his father and getting to go to the U.S. Congress, how that affected him when he got to the Congress and one of his very first roles as a freshman. So, Speaker, tell us about that personal experience you had and how it related back to your father for you.
So several weeks after that, it was early 2017, it was my freshman term, and it fell to me to be in the rostrum one night to serve here as Speaker pro tem. I thought that was a big deal until I figured out that's what you do for freshmen late at night. I looked up at the top and in the chamber there, and I saw the face of Moses staring down. And I just felt in that moment the weight of this place, right? The history that is revered here and the future that we are called to forge. And I really was just kind of almost overwhelmed with emotion. It occurred to me in that moment, it had been several weeks and I had not had an opportunity yet to grieve my dad's passing, and I just had this sense that somehow he knew. And I had tears come to my eyes, and I was standing here and I'm wiping them away, and then it suddenly occurs to me, the late night C-SPAN viewers are going to think something's very wrong with the new young congressman from Louisiana. I just knew in that moment that my dad, my father would be proud of me, and I felt that he was.
Well, Speaker Johnson, talk about pride from your father. You related to how proud you were of your father and now how proud you know your father is of you as you assume that Speaker pro tem position. Relate that back to the American people. And we don't hear that word too much, pride. Pride in our country seems to have been lost. What's your thinking about pride in the country and where we go and how we maybe restore that as we move forward under your leadership?
All the American people at one time had great pride in this institution, but right now that's in jeopardy. And we have a challenge before us right now to rebuild and restore that trust. This is a beautiful country. It's the beauty of America that allows a firefighter's kid like me to come here and serve in this sacred chamber where great men and women have served before all of us and strive together to build and then preserve what Lincoln did refer to as the last best hope of man on earth.
Speaker, we stand at very dangerous times, I think you have said many times before. How do you plan on governing? What are the basic principles of some of the things? How do we turn that pride in America into being the strong country that we have been before, where people can actually work together and to move us forward on the many issues. And maybe you can outline a couple of those issues that you think are most important to the country to address, that as Speaker you'll be bringing forward as top priority issues.
We stand at a very dangerous time. I'm stating the obvious. We all know that. The world is in turmoil. But a strong America is good for the entire world. We are the beacon of freedom, and we must preserve this grand experiment in self-governance. It still is. We're only 247 years into this grand experiment. We don't know how long it will last. But we do know that the founders told us to take good care of it. I don't believe there are any coincidences in a matter like this. I believe that Scripture, the Bible, is very clear that God is the one that raises up those in authority. He raised up each of you, all of us. And I believe that God has ordained and allowed each one of us to be brought here for this specific moment in this time. This is my belief. I believe that each one of us has a huge responsibility today to use the gifts that God has given us to serve the extraordinary people of this great country, and they deserve it, and to ensure that our republic remains standing as the great beacon of light and hope and freedom in a world that desperately needs it.
Your references to the Bible and your beliefs are obviously very important to you personally, but it also has to drive some of your political agenda, your political beliefs, the foundations of your own life. You're going to bring that sort of moral compass to your governing. Not that you're going to proselytize or push people in one religious direction or another one, but I think you have a very strong faith, and I think you also have expressed a story before about the sign "In God You Trust" being over the speaker's desk. Tell us and our audience a little bit about that, because just by bringing that up, I think it shows your level of faith.
It was in 1962 that our national motto, "In God We Trust," was adorned above this rostrum. And if you look at the little guide that they give tourists and constituents who come and visit the house, if you turn in there to about page 14 in the middle of that guide, it tells you the history of this. And it says very simply, these words were placed here above us. This motto was placed here as a rebuke of the Cold War era philosophy of the Soviet Union. That philosophy was Marxism and communism, which begins with the premise that there is no God. This is a critical distinction that is also articulated in our nation's birth certificate. We know the language well, the famous second paragraph that we used to have children memorize in school, and they don't do that so often anymore, but they should. G.K. Chesterton was the famous British philosopher and statesman, and he said one time, "America is the only nation in the world that is founded upon a creed." And he said it's listed with almost theological lucidity in the Declaration of Independence. What is our creed? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, not born equal, created equal. And they are endowed by the same inalienable rights, with the same inalienable rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. That is the creed that has animated our nation since its founding, that has made us the great nation that we are. And we're in a time of extraordinary crisis right now. And the world needs us to be strong. They need us to remember our creed and our admonition.
Well, audience, if you're listening closely, and I hope you are, this is a man, Mike Johnson, a man of faith, of conservative basic principles and values. He's not talking about partisan issues. He's trying to show that he's got some substance to himself, that he's going to bring that same concept of faith in America and belief in America and American exceptionalism to his leadership post. Well, I want to hear more about his political agenda in the next segment. So let's take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Hey folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday 1 to 2, only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember folks, I'm not angry, I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we are listening to and understanding and getting to know a new voice of conservative leadership in the House of Representatives. Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana was recently elected to be Speaker of the House. He's a very sophisticated, intelligent, legal mind with very conservative principles of faith and family and country that he is not afraid to speak about. So we want to learn more about his policy issues. We learned in the first segment today about some of his background, his upbringing, a little bit about his faith. And today I want to go a little bit further than that. I want to talk about policy since that's so important. We got a lot of crises going on around the world. And I want to hear what his thoughts are relative to potential solutions, collaboration, support, whatever it takes from the House of Representatives. Remember, listeners, that all money bills have to start in the House of Representatives. So controlling the purse string is what the House does, what the Republicans in the majority are able to do now. And what as Speaker and the leader of the House of Representatives, it's important to know what some of the issues are that might need some funding. Is he going to just continue assisting printing more money? Is there going to be some offsets? Is he going to save money in other areas? Is he going to propose tax cuts or just more and more government spending, bigger and bigger government? It's important to know whether his conservative philosophy will carry over into actual actions. As they like to say, actions speak louder than words. So let's hear his take on what's going on in the world, and then we'll find out more as we go along around what are his policy proposals.
And we're in a time of extraordinary crisis right now, and the world needs us to be strong. They need us to remember our creed and our admonition. Turmoil and violence have rocked the Middle East and Eastern Europe. We all know it. And tensions continue to build in the Indo-Pacific. The country demands strong leadership of this body, and we must not waver. Our nation's greatest ally in the Middle East is under attack. The first bill that I'm going to bring to this floor in just a little while will be in support of our dear friend Israel. We're going to show not only Israel, but the entire world that the barbarism of Hamas that we have all seen play out on our television screens is wretched and wrong, and we are going to stand for the good in that conflict. We have a catastrophe at our southern border. The Senate and the White House can no longer ignore the problem. From Texas to New York, wave after wave of illegal migrants are stressing our communities to their breaking points. We know that our streets are being flooded with fentanyl, and all of our communities, children, and even adults are dying from it. The status quo is unacceptable. Inaction is unacceptable, and we must come together and address the broken border. The skyrocketing cost of living is unsustainable, and Americans should not have to worry about how they're going to feed their family every week because they can't afford their groceries anymore. Everybody in this room should think about this. Here's the stats. Prices have increased over 17% in the last 2 years. Credit card interest rates are at the highest level in nearly three decades, and mortgage rates are now at a peak we haven't seen since 2001. We have to bring relief to the American people by reining in federal spending and bringing down inflation.
Well, Speaker Johnson, with all those problems that you laid out, and they're pretty daunting, tell our audience what you think is the greatest domestic threat and maybe international threat that we face, because if we're not strong at home, we can't be strong internationally. But in your opinion, what is the biggest problem that you're going to face in even reaching some sort of bipartisan agreement on something that is so important and top of mind for you?
The greatest threat to our national security is our nation's debt. And while we've been sitting in this room, that a debt has crossed almost $33.6 trillion. It's unsustainable. We have to get the country back on track. Now, we know this is not going to be an easy task, and tough decisions will have to be made. But the consequences, if we don't act now, are unbearable. We have a duty to the American people to explain this to them so they understand it well. And we are going to establish a bipartisan debt commission to begin working on this crisis immediately.
Well, Speaker Johnson, you're obviously trying to step out with a good bipartisan approach to reducing government spending. That's not going to be easy. I'm surprised in a lot of ways that you've got a bipartisan commission you're able to appoint. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Of course, those of us who are cynical about commissions that we've seen in the past, they just don't do anything. It's just a way of sort of putting things off and let it die while you're saying you're going to try to do something. So I will be more optimistic at the moment and give you the benefit of the doubt that, in fact, such a commission appointed by you with the right people from both Republican and Democratic side can agree that we've got a major problem with enormous government spending after COVID, after the inflation relief plan, the wasted government dollars that are being spent around the world in so many different ways. So I wish you luck, and I wish you all the hope in the world that it can come to fruition the way you're talking about. But we do have this split that's been around for a long time. It gets deeper and more partisan and more bitter in many ways. Tell us how you think that's going to play out with such a divided government and a divided ideology. How are you going to be able to work through that, and what are your concerns?
We all know that we also live in a time of bitter partisanship. It was noted, and it's been on display here today, right? When our people are losing their faith in government, when they're losing sight of the principles that made us the greatest nation in the history of the world, I think we got to be mindful of that. We're going to fight. We're going to fight vigorously over our core principles, because they're at odds a lot of times now in this modern era. We have to sacrifice sometimes our preferences because that's what's necessary in a legislative body. But we will defend our core principles to the end.
You obviously recognize, Speaker Johnson, that civil dialogue, communication is the key to trying to work together in a non-combative way to try to get your ideas and principles across, have a good, vigorous discussion. Do you have an example of somebody that you would follow and their demeanor and their approach to be able to work together with people who may not fully agree with you or may have ideological differences? Give us an example of what you're thinking about.
In his farewell address, President Reagan explained the secret of his rapport with people. And I like to paraphrase his explanation all the time. He said, you know, they call me the great communicator, but I really wasn't that. He said, I was just communicating great things, and they're the same great things that they've guided our nation since its founding.
So that's a great concept, communicating great ideas. And Ronald Reagan clearly did that. He kept the big picture in mind, and he talked about things like Star Wars and getting rid of the nuclear stockpiles and peace with Russia, peace around the world, a good economy. All those things were big ideas that at the time he was criticized for. But I think you're right. Big ideas tend to bring people together, because maybe it's such a new and big idea they hadn't decided which side of that argument they're on. So what are your big ideas? What would you say are the biggest things that you want to pursue as Speaker? What are the big ideas that you want to present to the American people?
What are those great things? I call them the seven core principles of American conservatism, but let me concede to you all, I think it's really quintessentially the core principles of our nation. I boil them down to individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free markets, and human dignity. Those are the foundations that made us the extraordinary nation that we are. And you and I today are the stewards of those principles, the things that have made us the freest, most powerful, most successful nation in the history of the world, the things that have made us truly exceptional. In this time of great crisis, it is our duty to work together, as previous generations of great leaders have, to face these great challenges and solve these great problems.
Those are big ideas, Speaker Johnson. They are uniting principles, hopefully, that we can get bipartisan support around. I think the challenge, of course, is to take each one of those principles and turn them into actual policies, actual legislation that will make a difference in American lives. They are at a very high level. They're very strategic in terms of the direction that you'd like to take the country. And then the tactical issues are actually developing the legislation and the policies and the programs to implement those. So as we sort of wrap up this second session here, and then we want to get on to some questions and answers for you, what do you see as your overall role to help implement these big ideas or to bring them forth? What is your role, and how are you going to conduct the actual new office of Speaker of the House that you now will occupy? How do you work with the rest of the Congress there to bring people together? What is your governing philosophy as Speaker, if you will?
The job of the Speaker of the House is to serve the whole body, and I will. But I've made a commitment to my colleagues here that this Speaker's office is going to be known for decentralizing the power here. My office is going to be known for members being more involved and having more influence in our processes and all the major decisions that are made here, for predictable processes and regular order. We owe that to the people. And I'm going to make this commitment to you, to my colleagues here and on the other side of the aisle as well. My office is going to be known for trust and transparency and accountability, for good stewardship of the people's treasure, for the honesty and integrity that is incumbent upon us, all of us, here in the people's house. Our system of government is not a perfect system. It's got a lot of challenges, but it is still the best one in the world.
Well, Mr. Speaker, you've set a good tone to start with, and we'll see how it follows up with policies and practices and a bipartisanship that to solve some of those problems. I know that's not going to be easy, but, you know, you may get a honeymoon period, you may not. But those are great policies of work within the government to try to bring forth some sanity once again to the public that many of our listeners haven't seen in a while. Let me just, in this final segment, last few minutes here, what is your message to the rest of the world now that we have a new Speaker of the United States House of Representatives?
Is a message to the rest of the world. They have been watching this drama play out for a few weeks. We've learned a lot of lessons, but you know what? Through adversity, it makes you stronger. And we want our allies around the world to know that this body of lawmakers is reporting again to our duty stations. Let the enemies of freedom around the world hear us loud and clear. The People's House is back in business.
Well, audience, there you have it. The original speech as he was accepting the speakership of the House of Representatives. I want you to hear the details of what he actually presented and his outreach, but also his core principles, his family, faith, and country beliefs that I think will guide us in the right conservative direction. I want you to stay tuned because we're going to drill down in some of these areas a little bit further to find out what his policy issues will be, what his legislative agenda will be, how he's going to be able to deal with some of these world issues. So let's take a quick commercial break, and we're going to come back with a series of questions and answers for the new House of Representatives Speaker, Mike Johnson.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to this segment of America's Web Radio. Today, we are really focusing on the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson from Louisiana. We've heard and commented on his acceptance speech, his very first speech before the House of Representatives. Now I want to turn a little bit and drill in on question and answers about specific topics that he is going to have to face. Of course, the very first one that he's facing immediately is the mass shooting in Maine and the Democrats and media piling on about, well, this means we need more gun control. So let's find out what kind of a Second Amendment advocate the new House Speaker is and what his response is as people are now using, once again, another event of somebody with a mental health issue, people that could have been identified earlier, and this one certainly was identified by family and police records and mental health records, and yet people continue to use this as a reason to try to implement or promote more gun control legislation. Speaker Johnson, what's your response to the need for more gun control?
At the end of the day, the problem is the human heart. It's not guns, it's not the weapons. At the end of the day, we have to protect the right of the citizens to protect themselves, and that's the Second Amendment. And that's why our party stands so strongly for that. This is not the time to be talking about legislation. We're in the middle of that crisis right now. But I just want you to know, and I want the American people to know, that all the members of the House here are deeply concerned about the families involved and everyone. And we pray for the law enforcement officers that are doing that hard job tonight that most people do not have the bravery to do.
Well, Speaker, is there, as you get pushed by the left and Democrats on this, is there any gun control legislation you would even consider? I mean, the reality is that people kill other people with something other than guns. We've seen people run into crowds and into individuals with cars, as an example, or killing them with knives. But, you know, the focus seems to be on gun control. So how strong of an advocate of the Second Amendment are you?
Well, been on the job for 48 hours. We'll see. I mean, there'll be lots of discussion, as there are after these heartbreaking tragedies. But your point is well taken. I mean, you know, in Europe and in other places, they use vehicles to mow down crowds at parades, where they've done that here in the United States. It's not the weapon. It's the underlying problem. I believe we have to address the root problems of these things. And mental health, obviously, as in this case, is a big issue, and we've got to seriously address that as a society and as a government, and there's lots of measures pending on that as well.
You know, in your speech to the full House of Representatives, it seemed to me, and the audience here heard that in our earlier segment, you were reaching out to the other side. You were trying to be rational and adult and present some broad perspectives and principles on which you would be governing and handing the leadership of the Speaker of the House. Yet almost immediately, the Democratic National Committee came out and attacked you. And here are some of the things that they said. They said you're anti-abortion, you're an extremist, you wanted to put you wanted to cut Medicare and Social Security, you're a MAGA extremist, and you want to put a ban on abortions. What do you say to the typical partisan rhetoric that just spews out regardless of who the Republican is and who the new leadership is? There's certainly no honeymoon period of just trying to wait and see how things start to shake out before they come out with their criticism. So how do you handle that kind of idiocy that just spews out hatred?
look, they don't know me. A lot of these people don't know me. And I think if they would talk to some of my colleagues here, even on the other side of the aisle that have worked with me for the 7 years that I've been on Capitol Hill, they would tell them that those things are not true. Give me a chance. Let me have a chance to lead here, and you'll see what I'm really about.
Speaker, what are some of the things that people ought to know about you that maybe they haven't heard even in these early stages? I understand that you've got an African-American son. The first son that you raised was African-American. You didn't adopt him because it takes 4 years or so, but you raised him as your own before you even had other children, biological children. And I understand that you've talked to him about things maybe that he should expect that are different from your biological children and the way he needs to understand and perceive society. Are you indicating with those comments that that there is structural racism in this country, and that's why you've told him to think about and react differently in certain circumstances than a white child might?
No, it's a reality, though. Having raised two 14-year-old boys in America, in the state of Louisiana, they had different experiences. And I'm not so sure it was all about skin color, but it is about culture and society. Michael, our first, came from a really troubled background and had a lot of challenges. Jack, on the other hand, was raised in our household from the time he was born. And it just struck me, Sean, that it's a reality that, you know, there are different paths in life, and people have lots of things they have to overcome. And so it gives you a lot of empathy. It allows you to see into the heart of people and really try to understand them better. And that comes in handy in this arena, because we're really expected to hate our colleagues on the other side of the aisle and beat them all the time as enemies, politically speaking. But you have to recognize that this is a system that was built upon disagreement. I mean, what the founders intended here in this legislative context is that we're going to come to the table with very different philosophical ideas and core principles, and we have to arm wrestle over that and reach consensus to move the ball forward for the American people. That's what the system is built upon, and right now people are going to their corners and they're refusing to talk. We've got to get over that.
Well, Speaker Johnson, you have an enormous task in front of you trying to bring together Republicans and Democrats, conservatives, liberals, socialists that you have to deal with there in Congress. The issues are so divided in this country, we really don't have people finding much middle ground. The ideological differences are so strong between open borders and having a wall and sanctuary cities and the rule of law and supporting the police and defunding the police and all the different issues, bigger government, smaller government. How do you bring together people like this? Where's the middle ground? Is there any middle ground that we can actually get something done and achieve in a bipartisan way for the betterment of the country?
There is less and less middle ground over the decades. The parties have grown very far apart. There's a wide chasm now. You know, if you rewound back 40 or 50 years, there wasn't really a lot of difference between the Republican and Democrat parties. If you compared their platforms, there were nuances about policy, but they believed in the same things. They were trying to do what's right for the country. You know, the allegation here about some of our colleagues is that's not really their agenda. And some of them really would like to trade what we have for a European-style socialist form of government. We know that is a terrible idea. So we stand for our foundational principles. What you have to do is get down to those core principles and argue, debate with your colleagues, and use the facts. You know, show them the reality. Socialism is a dead end. Communism and Marxism are terrible things. It's been responsible for the deaths of tens of millions of innocent people over the 20th century alone, right? That is not the path we want to go down. America is different, and we are exceptional because we stand on certain foundational principles.
Speaker Johnson, could you outline for our audience what those basic principles are that you're going to govern by? And you see those, I believe, different from specific policies or actions. They're just basic principles and directions that give you guidance on the things you want to address. What are What are those principles?
I talked about the core principles of American conservatism, and that's individual freedom, limited government, the rule of law, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free markets, and human dignity. And under each of those, there would be subcategories. But that's what we stand for. I call them the core principles of American conservatism, but it's really the core principles of America itself. We're different. We're exceptional. The reason we're the freest, most powerful, most nation in the history of the world is because that's what we stand for. And those values and those principles are under assault right now. We have to defend them here every day with everything we have.
Mr. Speaker, have you had a chance to meet with the president yet? You're obviously going to have to work hand in hand with him and with leaders of the Senate on both Republican and Democratic side. Tell us about your first meetings with the president of the United States.
Well, I actually had a visit with the president at the White House today for about 15 or 20 minutes. The other parties were running late, so it was he and I sitting there together. It was a meet and greet. I'd only met him once before. It was cordial and pleasant. I have no problem with President Biden as an individual. You respect the office. It's a biblical admonition to give honor where honor is due, and that's the respect that we have for the office. But he and I disagree on almost no policy, so we didn't get into that too much.
Well, Speaker, it's nice that you can say you respect the office, but in terms of the policies of the Biden administration, is there anything that you can agree on that he's done a good job with on policy?
I can't. I think it's been a failed presidency, and all the problems, some of them were caused by policy choices, and that's the problem I have with him. It's just philosophical.
Well, I appreciate the fact you say you respect his office and that you also totally disagree with his policies and can't find anything that he's done that kind of makes any sense. That certainly is consistent with many of us in this audience and myself who are conservative and have found very troubling many of his policies. He is running for re-election, and many of us also think that there is a significant cognitive decline. When we see him on TV and interviews or talking to the press, it just doesn't seem to be the same Joe Biden with any kind of a vigor or awareness. He cuts short questions. He mixes his words. He'll stop in mid-sentence. As Speaker of the House and one of the new leaders, how do you view this potential cognitive decline? Do you see it?
I do. I think most of us do. That's reality. This is not a personal slight to him. It has to do with age and acumen, and everyone's different. Everyone ages differently. Clearly, if you look at a tape of Joe Biden making an argument in the Senate Judiciary Committee a few years ago, and you see a speech that he delivers now, there's a difference. Again, I mean, it's not a personal insult to him. It's just reality. And this is what's concerning to us, is that we cannot project weakness of any kind on the world stage right now. This is a dangerous time for all the things going on around the world. The world is a tinderbox. A strong America is good for the whole world, and we have to project strength. I mean, Reagan used to remind us all the time, it's peace through strength. If America shows weakness, it invites aggression by our adversaries, and that's what you're seeing around the world.
Well, Speaker Mike Johnson, I hope our audience is getting a good flavor of your version of conservatism and the leadership that you're going to be bringing to the office and to the House of Representatives. We've got one more segment, and we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to delve back into some of the policy issues and philosophies of the new Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Veteran-owned, America's Web Radio would like to thank all of our incredible patrons. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. If you are not already a patron, you can help us continue to produce some of the most informative and entertaining shows on the internet by becoming a patron. Patrons of America's Web Radio are the first to receive information about new shows and links to the latest podcast episodes. Join now and receive a free gift while supplies last. For more information and to join our family, please visit www.patreon.com/America's Web Radio. If you have questions, contact us at gm@americaswebradio.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
What do doctors talk about in doctors' lounges around the country? Find out on The Doctor's Lounge Show, every Thursday at 8 a.m. on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we are doing an in-depth analysis, review, and getting insights into the new Speaker of the House, Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana. He is obviously, from what we've even heard so far, he's a man of faith, believes his country is unique, and is destined to be here by Providence. He really is an unbelievably strong conservative. And one of the issues that he's had a lifelong involvement in is that marriage is between a man and a woman. And a decade or more ago, that was the law in many states. They were passing legislation saying that marriage is between a man and a woman. He was unabashed in that approach. Of course, almost every politician, even President Biden, was in favor of one man, one woman before he changed and the LGBTQ plus population got so politically strong. So as new speaker, he's being hit very strongly with being homophobic, of his being hit strong on his Christian faith in general. So let's ask him specifically about those activities that he was working on state-by-state basis and as a lawyer was defending the idea of marriage between one man and one woman. So, Speaker, tell us some about what was really going on because you're being hit politically in a very strong negative way by the Democrats for that historical position.
I think it was over 35 states, somewhere in that number, that the people went to the ballot in their respective states and they amended their state constitutions to say marriage is one man, one woman. Well, I was a religious liberty defense lawyer and I was called to go in and defend those cases in the courts. Let me state this very clearly, and there's been questions about this. Let me say where I am. Anybody that knows me will tell you this is true. I am a rule of law guy. I made a career defending the rule of law. I respect the rule of law. When the Supreme Court issued the Obergefell opinion, that became the law of the land, okay? I respect the rule of law, but I also genuinely love all people, regardless of their lifestyle choices. This is not about the people themselves. I am a Bible-believing Christian. Someone asked me today in the media, they said, it's curious. People are curious. What does Mike Johnson think about any issue under the sun? I said, well, go pick up a Bible off your shelf and read it. That's my worldview. That's what I believe. Personal worldview. But here's the thing. Everybody comes to the House of Representatives with deep personal convictions. But all of our personal convictions are not going to become law. This is a big body of people. There's 435 members in the House. You have to argue and find consensus and all of that. So I have no agenda other than what's best for the American people and to defend the rule of law. And that's what we're doing.
So Speaker Johnson, I understand and accept as well that the other side is going to find wedge issues and try to focus on abortion and gay rights and LGBTQ issues instead of the real issues that are facing us today domestically and in foreign policy. So outline what you think are the major issues we ought to be addressing rather than trying to rehash the abortion issue or gay rights issues.
We have such big priorities in this moment right now. We have Israel being attacked. We have unrest. We have the Ukraine situation we've got to deal with. We have China being aggressive. We have Iran with all the meddling and China, Russia, and Iran working together. This is a dangerous time. The economy is in the tank. The border's overrun. People are dying from fentanyl poisoning. All of these issues. These are the frontline matters that that have our attention right now. And the rest of these things, they're just using for political attacks.
Speaker Johnson, there's one other issue that has come up in these early days of your being Speaker of the House. And that is a bill that you sponsored called the Stop Sexualization of Children Act of 2022. Now, looking at that act, it's very similar to what Governor DeSantis did in Florida. In this federal bill, it says stop the sexualization of our children under age 10. So you're not talking about doing anything beyond that. It's just kids under age 10 shouldn't be sexualized by our education system when they need to do math, reading, writing, arithmetic, computers, etc. That's sort of where you drew the line, and you're not going to go beyond that, are you?
No, and if you poll this anywhere in the country, almost any state, any community, they're going to say moms and dads should be the ones responsible for talking about these sensitive issues with their children, not the public school system. I mean, I'll take that debate anywhere, Main Street, in any town hall, in any city in America. I would love for them to challenge us on that, because that's what the American people believe, and that's what I believe.
Okay, Mr. Speaker, let's talk about something that our audience who may be listening to that to this week, about a very current vote that's likely to come up, a debate in Congress over the funding of both Israel and Ukraine and the border ultimately as well. But right now it looks like after having given $78 billion to Ukraine, the president wants another $61 billion passed as a package along with $14 billion to Israel. That, you know, is going to be debatable as to whether that should be packaged or you talk about them individually. Do you break them up? And since any kind of financial legislation, tax increases, those sorts of things have to start in the House, how are you going to handle this early debate that you might have? Are you going to break up the package into pieces, or are you going to have it as one big package that the Democrats seem to want to have?
I told the staff at the White House today that our consensus among House Republicans is that we need to bifurcate those issues. I agree with your assessment in Ukraine, and that's why the American people are demanding some real accountability for the use of those dollars. Now, we can't allow Vladimir Putin to prevail in Ukraine because I don't believe it would stop there, and it would probably encourage and empower China to perhaps make a move on Taiwan. We have these concerns. We're not going to abandon them, but we have a responsibility, a stewardship responsibility over the precious treasure of the American people. And we have to make sure that the White House is providing the people with some accountability for the dollars. And we want to know what the objective there is. What is the end game in Ukraine? The White House has not provided that. I was at the White House for a couple of hours today, and I told the staff there that this is where we are. This is where the House Republicans are.
Mr. Speaker, it certainly would be a big change in Congress if somebody was held accountable, if there is some transparency and the billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars that we continuously spend and nobody knows where it goes. It goes out to some bureaucratic arm of the executive branch and just gets wasted. What is your approach to trying to encourage the administration to be more accountable and give us some facts about the spending of money, for example, in Ukraine?
We've got a group of our colleagues here in the House, led by Mike Garcia out of California, a brilliant legislator and a top gun pilot. And some of our veterans have gotten together. Dan Crenshaw is involved in this and others. They came up with a document that presents 12 critical questions for the White House to answer as a condition of our supplying the additional support. These are not hard questions, things the White House should be forthcoming about. I delivered that myself. Yes. So we want to be cooperative. We need to work together on this, but we owe it to the people to know what the plan is, where the money is going to be spent, and we need some auditing for the dollars that we've already sent over there. These are not tough questions, right? Mm-hmm. Israel is a separate matter. We're going to bring forward a standalone Israel. $14.5 billion specifically is what we're looking at. It's a very specific number tied to very specific measures. But here's the important thing that distinguishes House Republicans from the other team. We're going to find pay-fors in the budget. We're not just printing money to send it overseas. We're going to find the cuts elsewhere to do that.
Well, Speaker Johnson, the world is very dangerous as you've described it. The Israel war may go on multiple fronts. You may have not just Hamas, but you may have Hezbollah, you could have the Houthis, you could have Syria, you could have Iran enter it. Is there any scenario where you can see the United States might actually put boots on the ground and get much more actively involved in the war in the Middle East?
It's a very delicate situation. It changes by the hour. We're watching it very closely. One thing that House Republicans are resolved on is that we must stand with our most important ally in the Middle East, and that's Israel. We will. We certainly hope that it doesn't come to boots on the ground. If it comes to that, and we communicated this to the White House staff as well today, that, you know, we have the Article 1 power in the legislative branch of government, and they have Article 2. They have very limited authority on what they can do to respond without coming to Congress to seek consent. And And even my Democrat colleagues that are in committees of jurisdiction understand this, in the Foreign Affairs Committee. There's a purpose for that. The reason the framers put that into the Constitution is that they wanted a multitude of wise counsel to decide upon military intervention matters, on a declaration of war. They wanted the duly elected representatives of the people to make that decision collectively, and not one commander-in-chief sitting in an office.
Speaker Johnson, we've only touched on some of the major issues around the world. Domestically, we seem to have such a mess with high inflation. Interest rates are killing families, young families in particular. They can't afford a house. Interest rates for mortgages are at all-time high. Inflation makes everything else cost an enormous amount as well. What's your view of how in the world do we get back to some sense of economic solvency, allowing this country to prosper once again and to increase our standard of living?
It grinds the economy to a halt. It's a disaster. That's the word you use, and that's the appropriate word. These are policy choices that got us in this situation. If you remember, if you rewind in your mind back to right before the pandemic began, you know, in the Trump administration, we had the greatest economy in the history of the world. And it wasn't by happenstance. It's because we cut taxes, cut regulations. We focused on American energy dominance. We were doing and following all the policies that led to economic success and growth for all Americans. Everyone in every demographic, all boats were rising. Mm-hmm. We can achieve that again, but you have to do almost exactly the opposite of what the Biden administration is pursuing and doing. This is not rocket science, but we're so far down the road now that we have to make these changes quickly. And we're trying to urge our Democrat colleagues to take a look again at the basic facts. I mean, interest rates are so high now, they're going to continue to rise.
Well, Speaker Johnson, how optimistic are you that we actually can sort of work our way through all these problems and actually find some bipartisan common ground?
And I'm very optimistic. I am bullish on the future of America. I am bullish on our chances to change the way Washington works. Once in a lifetime opportunity here. That's the vision I've cast to my colleagues. I believe it to my core. We're going to take this day by day, decision by decision, but keep everybody together and move the ball forward for the American people. I genuinely believe that we can get this done. I think right now we're in very desperate times. I think the hour is late and the crisis is great, but here's why I'm encouraged. In previous generations of Americans, from the framers, the founders of this country all the way through, at times of the Revolutionary period, the Civil War, the Great Depression, the other world wars, when the leaders here got in trouble that was beyond the scope of what they could solve themselves, individually or collectively, you know what they did? They sought divine guidance for it. We have "In God We Trust" right above the rostrum there, and I pointed that out in my speech. We're calling one another to humble ourselves and recognize that the challenges are so great, but that's where a real opportunity is presented. I believe that God is not done with America yet, okay? I still believe in that motto. It's not just a quaint saying to me. It's what the nation was founded upon, this belief. It's what distinguishes us from all these other communist, Marxist, socialist countries around the world. It's the key to our greatness, and we ought to appeal to that. And I believe if we do, that God is going to give us his favor, and I believe we're going to solve these problems.
Well, audience, there you have it. The essence of the new voice of conservatism, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson from Louisiana. Those of you who have been looking for somebody who can speak the truth, speak conservative principles, can be in a position of leadership to actually carry that out and to work with others across the aisle. He's reaching out his hand. He's reaching out his hand to the president, but I guess we'll see whether there is an ability to humble themselves across both sides of the aisle and actually get something done. But at least we're off to a good start, and I hope this last hour has given you some insight to a really promising, great new conservative leader, Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Join us again next week for more political commentary on current topics and current individuals involved in helping to shape our lives and our families and our children's lives.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.